Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Michael Kaufman. And Dr. Kaufman has his PhD in dealing with forestry and certainly matters dealing with biology. He has, of course, been working for some time trying to expose the move towards the New World Order. And his latest DVD, which we do carry, deals with global warming. Now, there is no better example of how the media is totally controlled, because if you read the media, if you read the news magazines, if you watch television, if you listen to radio, you will be told over and over and over again that global warming is a reality and that all scientists believe it. There's hardly any scientists, well, the only scientists who don't go along with global warming are the deniers. Sort of like the deniers, they deny the Holocaust happened. This is a derogatory term, but the truth of the matter is that the vast majority of scientists who know anything at all about climate feel that this is a great fraud, and it's really all just designed to destroy the industrial base of our country. And certainly our good friend Dr. Art Robinson has sent out a questionnaire to scientists all across America. And over 17,000 scientists who specialize in the field of having to do with climate and atmosphere have written back and signed that petition saying there is absolutely no evidence that man's activity has contributed to global warming. How much warming have we had over the last year, the last hundred years? About 0.6 degrees. And most of it occurred actually before 1940, when we began having so many people driving in cars. 0.6 degrees. And because we've had 0.6 degrees as part of actually worldwide global warming system that is cyclic, began somewhere in the 1600s, 1700s. Based upon that, they want to massively restrict the energy consumption here in the West and destroy our industrial base and impoverish our people. Dr. Kaufman, how have they been able to sell this scam to the American people?
Well, there's a number of things. The first is that you have a total cadre of reporters out there that have been indoctrinated in their journalism schools to basically believe, from a liberal standpoint, that the world is going to hell in a handbasket, and that they're very open to these kinds of accusations, and they're woefully prepared to even investigate what is going on. In other words, they are basically set up to believe this and believe it like there is pablum to a baby. Secondly, you have a group of people, even within that group, that has got a personal agenda. They have been, again, indoctrinated to the point where they feel that it's their responsibility that they have to convince the rest of the world that we need to do this in order to save ourselves, of course, them along with it. But most of all, even if you have an intellectually honest journalist that I have found as I traveled around the country, that they, even if they want to write a good report, in other words, a balanced report, their editor board will scotch it. And then fifth, you've got tremendous amount of money, $50 billion basically, greasing the skids to make this happen.
And, of course, you wonder why anybody would want to do something that would destroy the industrial base of America. And it's very simple. There are people out there like Al Gore who hate America, whose family fortune came from Armand Hammer, who was a dedicated communist who owned Occidental Petroleum. And, of course, Al Gore made all of his money, his family made their money on Occidental Petroleum. From the hydrocarbon industry. Well, Dr. Kaufman, you go right ahead.
One of the things that most people do not understand is that the scientific community for the most part, as you mentioned in the introductory comments, 17,000 scientists, actually 18,000 now, that have PhDs and master's degrees that are somehow associated with this have signed a petition saying basically that there is insufficient evidence to suggest that man is doing it. And that's an understatement. There is actually no evidence. Nonetheless, there are those scientists out there that are willing to sell their souls for a buck. I don't need to necessarily slam them, because you can go into this believing. In fact, at one time, I led a multi-million dollar research effort, and in the beginning of that, I felt that basically man was causing it. I thought that carbon dioxide probably was responsible. That was back in the late 1980s. And what I found was that the evidence just wasn't stacking up. Well, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of scientists like me, that got trapped into that scenario, whereas their next grant, and they had to stay employed because they had a family at home, kids to raise, and so forth. If they don't get another grant, they are out on the street because they're on soft money. Even though they work for a university, they can only stay employed as long as they continue to bring in money, this soft money. And the government will not give. In fact, there are many scientists out there that have gotten sick of this and have said, no, I'm not going to do it anymore, and they don't have a job anymore because they no longer toe the line. Over $50 billion have been spent, given to scientists and other causes and so forth, to promote this kind of garbage that global warming is caused by man. Now, we are having global warming, or at least we had. It's interesting now that if you've, well, no matter where you are, you found that this winter was a pretty cold, long winter. Whether you were in Southern California or here in the Northeast where I am right now, it was colder and longer than normal. And there's a reason for that, because it's not carbon dioxide that's causing global warming. It's basically the sun. And it's not the amount of direct radiation or energy that the sun emits, because there isn't sufficient amount of variability in the actual amount of energy emitted by the sun, but it's the type of energy. When the sun becomes very active, and you see a lot of sunspots, it happens every 11 years, then you have warming. There's a reason for that. I'll talk about it in a moment. But on the other hand, if the sun is quiet and there's not that much solar flares, there's not much sunspots and so forth, what happens is that the sun, that the Earth begins to cool. In fact, for about 100 years back in the 1700s, there were no sunspots, and the Earth went through what is known as the Little Ice Age. It was a degree to almost 2 degrees colder than it is right now.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Dr. Michael Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Dr. Michael Kaufman, and certainly we do have global warming. We've had it for about 400 years now, but of course during the last 100 years, during the 20th century, the increase in temperature was about 6-tenths of a degree. 6-tenths of a degree, and this is a major crisis. Why, the world has been much hotter than it is today. 1,000 years ago, Greenland was green. There were crops grown on the shores of Greenland. There certainly were crops grown, and grapes were grown in northern Great Britain, in northern England. And, of course, when it's warmer, why, of course, you have much more arable land, and certainly the crops grow far better. In fact, global warming is preferable to global cooling, because, after all, it was about 1300 when things began to cool and the Vikings had to move their settlements off the coast of Greenland because the ice was advancing. They never tell you this. All they want to tell you is that it's all related to carbon dioxide. The polar ice caps are melting. They never tell you, however, the polar ice caps are melting on Mars. They're melting on Mars because certainly the whole solar system is warming because of global flares and because of the influence of the sun. And there are other things that influence this as well, which I'm sure Dr. Kaufman will cover. You go right ahead, Dr. Kaufman.
Yes, it's one of those things where back in the 1700s, as you were alluding to, it was much colder than it is right now. The Thames River in England froze. You had grapes growing 400 to 500 years before that. Now you couldn't grow grapes in Great Britain. All of these things were stacking up in a way that was very, very harsh conditions. Crops failed because of the short growing seasons. A massive starvation, pestilence, was the norm during that period of time, not the exception. It was a horrible time for mankind. And every time you've seen a cooling period for planet Earth, you've experienced these kinds of conditions. Every time you've seen a warming period, humanity, the Earth, ecosystems, everything else prospered. And here we have a government policy that is trying to tell us that we need to go back to a much cooler period of time. It's absolutely insane. There is no reason in the world why we shouldn't be looking for even more carbon dioxide. There was a time, a long time ago, where the Earth's carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere were probably at least a minimum of 10 times greater than they are right now. If you've ever been in an auditorium for more than an hour or so, listening to a concert or watching a movie or whatever the case might be, your actual carbon dioxide levels in that auditorium are good to 10 to 15 times what they are in a normal situation outside. And so we are very well adapted. The amount of carbon dioxide, it takes about 100 times more carbon dioxide than we have right now to begin to be toxic to either human beings, plants, or animals. And one of the things that really, really does really impress me about carbon dioxide, because it's really a miracle gas, we cannot live without carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is the basic food materials for all plants. Without carbon dioxide, they cannot produce food, they cannot grow, they cannot produce crops for us, and of course, they're not going to produce oxygen, which we need to breathe. And as a result, carbon dioxide is critically important, and the more carbon dioxide there is, the faster plants grow. The faster plants grow, the more food they produce. And it's already been demonstrated that our food production is probably up by 8 or 9% in the last 50 years because of the increased carbon dioxide levels. If it doubles, the food production can go as high as 50% higher than what we're seeing right now. It's a miracle gas. It's a natural fertilizer. And here we're doing everything we can to stop it from happening. It's literally ludicrous. And finally, the question comes down to, is carbon dioxide really causing greenhouse, it is a greenhouse gas. Let me rephrase that. Is it really causing global warming? One of the other things that you're never ever told is that carbon dioxide is like a coat of paint over glass. If you paint a glass white, just one coat of paint, some of the light still gets through, but not all of it. If you put two coats on, less gets through. By the time you're up to four or five coats of white paint, almost no light gets through. That's the same thing that carbon dioxide does. The first bit of carbon dioxide is very effective as a greenhouse gas, but as you add more and more, it becomes less effective as a greenhouse gas, until finally at about 300 to 400 parts per million, it's really any increase is not going to make much of a difference. All the scientists know this. And it's included in the models themselves, the climate change models. But what they have done is that they have projected that because we have more carbon dioxide, it's going to have the effect of having more cirrus clouds. Those are the high elevation, 30, 40, 50,000 feet above the surface of the Earth. Those hot, thin, wispy clouds that allow sunlight through, but the long-wave radiation that the Earth itself emits is not allowed to go through. That's caused, or they felt it was going to be caused, by global warming. The fact is, however, a recent project that was studied was just completed last year as showing that it's not happening. And if it's not happening, then CO2 cannot be responsible. It's as simple as that. Because the law of physics demands that happen if carbon dioxide is basically the fundamental reason we're having the warming. And as a consequence, the heat is not being trapped. Now, if we're having warming and the heat's not being trapped, then there's got to be something else that's responsible. And that, of course, is the sun. The sun basically, not in the absolute amount of energy that's emitted, but the type of energy. When the sun becomes active, as I mentioned a moment ago, it emits a lot of gamma radiation, a lot of plasma is ejected in these solar storms and so forth, and they cause the aurora borealis that you've seen either on pictures or you've seen it yourself personally. That particular energy has an effect, probably in more ways than one, but one of the ways that the scientists are looking at it is that by having more solar winds with this plasma being ejected from the sun, what happens is it pushes back what is called cosmic radiation. What is cosmic radiation? That's the real short-wave radiation that comes from exploding supernovae from suns that are thousands of light years away. By the time it gets to Earth, these waves get to Earth, what they do is the cosmic radiation interacts at the lower elevations of our atmosphere in a way that causes cloud formation. Now, if you've ever been in an airplane and you've flown above a low cloud bank, what you find is that those clouds are very, very bright. Why are they bright? Because the sun is reflecting off of the top of those clouds. If you're in the clouds, of course, it's very gray, but if you're above them, basically it's very bright because the sun is reflecting. Now, if the sun is reflecting, that basically means that the solar energy that might otherwise reach the Earth's surface is not going to make it. And as a consequence, that energy that would have otherwise made it to the Earth's surface is now reflected back into outer space. The net result? The Earth cools. So when the cosmic radiation is coming in very strongly, we have more cloud formation at the lower elevations, more solar reflection, and cooler Earth's temperatures. But when the sun becomes active and actually pushes that cosmic radiation out into the outer ranges of our solar system, what happens is that you no longer have as much cosmic radiation. More or fewer clouds are formed, more of the solar energy reaches the Earth's surface, and voila, we have warming conditions. And we've had these kinds of conditions now for the last 50 or about 40 years. There for a period of time between 1945 and 1975, we didn't have that. The sun kind of quieted down a little bit. But since that time, the sun has become very active until about 10 years ago when it started to level off again. And last year, it's quieted right down to almost nothing. And we've had the coldest winter in the last 30 years. Not surprising. Before that, in the period of 1915 to 1945, the sun was active again, and we had the warmest temperatures ever recorded on planet Earth. Regardless of what you hear, the warmest temperatures haven't been in the last 15 years. They were in the 1930s. Straight out.
Well, and of course, they're not going to tell you that because the people who control the media want you to believe that global warming is a reality, that the snows are melting on Kilimanjaro, that the Antarctic ice caps are melting. And, of course, they will show you these pictures of the ice cascading and down, falling off the edge of the, these cliffs of ice into the water, and they will tell you this. They'll show you these pictures, and those pictures become your reality. Whereas the truth is, if you measure the temperature, why we certainly, as Dr. Kaufman said, this last winter was one of the coldest in history, but that doesn't matter. They're going to tell you, well, it's not global warming, it's climate change now. Climate change is the real thing, and if we're having global cooling, why, it's because of the CO2. Why do they want to do that? Well, they want to convince us that we've got to stop CO2 emissions. We can only do that by stopping generating a power using coal or oil or natural gas. All of those, of course, emit CO2 as they're burned. They will not allow us to use nuclear energy, although every other country in the world is using nuclear energy. They tell us we don't know what to do with the spent fuel. Well, every other country recycles the fuel. They will not allow it to be recycled here because they want the problem, because they want to destroy the industrial base of our country and impoverish our people. When you understand that, it's laid out in the Earth Charter, point 10A, equitable distribution of wealth between nations, within nations and between nations. How do you redistribute wealth from our nation to others? Why, you destroy our industrial base. You impoverish our people. But isn't that a good thing? Wouldn't it be fine if more and more people lost their jobs, their homes? We got people out of their cars and onto bicycles or get back walking. Wouldn't that be great? There are people who have a different worldview. Of course, Al Gore will continue having his planes. He will having his SUV, his massive house that, of course, burns 10 times as much energy as the common man. But this is the elitist concept, and they really want to destroy the industrial base of our nation. When you understand that, it really all makes sense. Well, Michael, they're doing a pretty good job of convincing the public that this is a reality. And even now, President Bush has come around and said, oh, we've really got to do something about the global warming. And, you know, we've got to cut emissions. And I don't know what he's suggesting we're going to do. But at least he is conceding the fact to them when there is no truth at all in it. Why would he do that?
That's a very good question. First of all, you have to recognize, and your book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, I think does a fairly good job with this. You have to realize that there are forces out there in this world that are vying for power. They all know that we're heading for a world government. It's just a matter of who's going to be on top of the dog pile when we get there. And the two primary contenders of this are the Anglo-American axis, as I call them, that you describe in your book, that is made up of the banking community, the financial community, the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Bank of England being the premier leaders of those. And then you have, on the other side, the European Union. Basically, they're a socialist organization. Most of those people hate capitalism. Well, of course, I don't particularly like capitalism the way it's structured right now either, because it's not true capitalism, but nonetheless, they hate capitalism. They want to establish a social structure. Then you have these two powers vying back and forth, and you will find one trying to put caps on, trying to show to slow down business, destroy business, and so forth. The other, which is the business community, absolutely wanting to maintain itself in some form or another, but wanting to be in control. And if you get hurt in the process, that doesn't make any difference as long as they come out on top in power. Now, they expect very fully that when all this happens, we're going to have a feudal system of government. That's basically how I showed the U.S. Senate back in 1994 that the Convention on Biological Diversity was designed to create a feudal system as well as put most of the country in the wilderness to stop the ratification of that treaty. They do want a feudal system, but they want to be the ones that are on top. And what I see President Bush doing is trying to stem off or head off the socialist efforts of these draconian carbon caps and so forth in order to somehow keep business going while still controlling what is happening and ultimately gaining control over our whole economy. They want the control over our economy, but they don't want to destroy the business in the process. So you have these two vying powers, and they are literally struggling in many cases, right there in the U.S. Capitol across the aisle from one another as to who is going to come out. But primarily it goes between the socialist Europeans, probably Russia is thrown into that as well. On the other side is the capitalists, so-called capitalists of the United States and Great Britain. And they're vying for this power. They all want this power. They all don't care at all what happens to you and I. They just want to protect themselves in the process and gain control.
It's really all about power. And, of course, a lot of this goes back to the Second Earth Summit, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Back in 1992 at Rio de Janeiro, it was all set up by a guy by the name of Maurice Strong. The wheels were greased at that particular point in time, the Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Desertification Convention on Desertification, go right down the list, and all of them were proposed at that time. Everybody thought it was an utter failure, but if you look back over the last 12 years or 15 years since that time, you'll see that most of what that meeting wanted to do in Rio has been done.
Hold on, I'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman, and we were just saying that really the master plan for what has happened over the last 15 or 17 years was laid out before the Second Earth Summit meeting, which was held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. A lot of this was laid out certainly by Prince Charles on his royal yacht when he convened a meeting of the financial leaders of the world, and Al Gore was there, and certainly the corporate leaders of the world were there, the political leaders of the world were there. And they hammered out this scheme that was, of course, going to include the Biodiversity Treaty, the Desertification Treaty, which would give the United Nations control over, you know, all the desert areas of the world, including the desert areas in the United States, and then, of course, the Kyoto Protocol, the Kyoto Treaty, which, of course, would destroy the industrial base of America. And even though Dr. Kaufman was able to prevent the Biodiversity Treaty from being enacted by our Senate back in 1994, why, of course, it's been progressively implemented by subsequent administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican, because, of course, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republican leadership. They all want global government. They all want to destroy the industrial base of our nation. They are all globalists, and, of course, they all want to impoverish the American people. And once you understand that, then you understand why they've created this terrible mess in the financial markets and why, of course, our economy is beginning to contract and people are losing their jobs and people are losing their homes and people are losing the value of their life savings through inflation and the falling dollar. But the average individual just can't put it all together because they've never read the master plan. Would you like to talk a little bit about the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that came out as a result of the Second Earth Summit?
I think that would be quite important. It's just one of those things that just gives legs to what we're talking about. Here is a document that was contracted out by the United Nations to the World Resources Institute back in 1992. The IUCN, or the International Union for Conservation of Nature, was a silent partner in this. They usually work together. One takes leadership, and the other one is a silent partner in almost anything that is done. And the World Resources Institute was supposed to come out with this global biodiversity assessment in 1994 in the spring with at least in draft form. We knew this, and we knew it was the heart of the Convention on Biological Diversity. And we were able to finally convince the U.S. Senate back a day, or the very day of the treaty. We got a copy of this particular document out of Europe. The United Nations had refused to acknowledge to the U.S. Senate that it even existed. We had to go through some serendipity ways to be able to get it. I think God was really involved in that. And we got it the day before. We found out exactly what it was designed to do, and it was designed to implement the Wildlands Project, which I had already told the U.S. Senate was going to happen. I've been in August, July actually, that year to do this. And there it was, finally in black and white. The Senate didn't believe me in July. They had to believe me in September. When we sent it down to the FedEx, down to the U.S. Senate with the maps that showed that they wanted to put one half of the United States into wilderness. It was unbelievable. And that map was blown up in a 4x6 foot poster and taken out on the U.S. Senate floor 1 hour before the treaty, the closure vote on the treaty. And Senator Mitchell at the time was the majority leader, withdrew the treaty from consideration. It was never voted on, primarily because I think God intervened and provided us that information. But this document basically called for the reduction of the human population by 2/3 in the next 50 years, 50 years from that time. 40 years now, and had plans to do this. They basically talked about creating a feudal system of governance because that's supposed to have left caused the least harm to the environment, although anywhere where you see poverty in the world today, there's a tremendous amount of environmental damage because the people are trying to survive. They're not looking at protecting the environment at all. They're looking for firewood. They're looking for the next meal and so forth. But nonetheless, theoretically, supposed to be if you're in abject poverty, you do not have the environmental impact on nature as you do when you're in the middle class and wealthy. Maurice Strong led the Second Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992 basically said that we have to eliminate the middle class. We just have to. We cannot have any of the materialistic things that the middle class in the North American continent enjoys today. So it's an astonishing thing, right there in black and white, they lay it all out.
That is the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. You can buy it. It's published by Cambridge University Press, and of course you would order it through your local bookstore. But of course there they actually talk about how they're either going to have to bring the population down to about 1 billion or lower the living standards of the people who are allowed to live to that of the Eastern Europeans, which of course is the peasant class, but remember, whenever you have the peasant class, you will always have the lords, and of course that's what it's all about. The ruling oligarchy that will control your destiny and the destiny of your children. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Dr. Michael Kaufman. We're talking about the global warming scam. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, the global warming scam is just that. It is designed basically, if you think back and just think about it long enough, you realize that everything that we do can trace back to some form of energy, either electrical energy, which is created by coal-fired generators or oil or natural gas, as you mentioned a while ago, Stan, or driving our cars, or using heavy equipment. It doesn't matter. It's all driven by petrochemicals in some form or another, except for nuclear. And, of course, they won't let us have nuclear. And because of this, if you can control the carbon dioxide emissions resulting from that combustion of either the automobile or the coal-fired generator or whatever the case is, you basically have control over our economy. It's a one-to-one relationship. There's no slack in this whatsoever. If we have to reduce by 10% our carbon dioxide emissions, we have to reduce by 10% the use of our power, either in the form of automobiles or electricity or whatever the case is. If we reduce it by 20% or 30% or 40% or 50%, you have to do basically the same thing. It's a straight line relationship. Now, eventually, I think technology is going to give us some alternatives to this, but those are a few years down the road. In fact, many years down the road. And right now, it's a one-to-one relationship. And yet, they want their pell-mell. Senate Bill 2191 right now would have us reduce our carbon dioxide emissions by 80%. You heard me. 80% in the next 70 to 80 years. The first one is 20% in 15 years. There is no way that we can meet that goal. Absolutely none. And as a consequence, what we have to do is reduce our standard of living, just like Maurice Strong said back in 1992, and get rid of our air conditioners, TVs, other sundry things that we take for granted to make our life more livable. It's as simple as that. It's impossible to do it any other way. Now, the only other way, of course, what they've done is come up with this scheme of carbon caps, carbon trading, and so forth, and you can buy your way out of this. If you're rich enough, you can, like Al Gore, you can buy carbon credits with an organization or a company, basically, that's going to somehow sequester that amount, supposedly. You can't really regulate it. Europe has shown very clearly that it can't be regulated.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman. We're talking about the danger, the very real danger, not of global warming, but of the effort to control global warming. And, of course, you can't control global warming because it has nothing to do with the CO2. It has to do with the changes in the sun. And so you can do all of these things and not going to make a bit of difference. And in fact, right now, one of the big problems is global cooling. This last winter was one of the coldest ones we've had in many, many years. But nobody likes to talk about that. They started changing the talk. Now it's not global warming, it's climate change. And, of course, the reason for climate change, whether it's warming or cooling, they'll always blame it on CO2 in the atmosphere, which makes up 0.038% of the atmosphere. That's all it is. 0.038% of the atmosphere, and we're supposed to believe that this is really producing global warming. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, have a question, and then of course we would want Dr. Kaufman to get his website out there. How people get your material, Michael?
Well, we have produced a tremendous DVD that you do now sell, Stan, called Global Warming or Global Governance, in which we have put together interviews of almost two dozen scientists, basically either biologists or climatologists in one form or another, that describe or discuss this carbon dioxide phenomenon. That is basically a hoax. They explain why it's a hoax, that it cannot be scientifically possible for it to happen that way, and as a result, by the time you finish watching this with all the graphics and so forth, it show very clearly that it cannot happen, and Al Gore's inconvenient truth is absolutely wrong. He has taken things either out of context or just used a bald-faced lie in several cases, that We do not have a man-caused global warming problem. Then the question you have to ask is why? If you're not having man-caused global warming, then you must have a reason for spending $50 billion of our tax dollars doing it. Well, the reason, of course, as we've been talking about this first half an hour, is that they want to create global governance. They want to scare us enough to give up our sovereignty, to pass either international treaties or our Senate bills and so forth, legislation here in the United States, that would literally hem us in and hemorrhage, basically, our taxes into funding this global agenda and allowing the international community to control our economy. And what, the international community being these elitists, of course, to control our economy, and basically eliminating the middle class, because you've seen it already. Over the last 25 to 30 years, our middle class has probably shrunk by one half. This is just a wild guess. I don't know how much it's shrunk, but it's really shrunk a lot. And as a result, you're already seeing this design that they're trying to do to create this feudal system where you have a lower class and the upper oligarchy. And they are being very effective in doing this by shipping our jobs overseas and so forth. Well, now, that DVD and others can be seen at two different places if you would like to look at these. Our business website is EPI, for Environmental Perspectives Incorporated, EPI-US.com. That's EPI-US.com. Or the DVD itself can be, we have a trailer on it, you can see it at, yes, warmingdvd.com, warmingdvd.com. Or you can actually call us if you're interested, and we can give you information by dialing 1-877, that's toll-free, 877-271-7639, 877-271-7639.
Well, Dr. Kaufman did an excellent job on this DVD, and we carry it because we think it's probably the best tool we have to educate people about, of course, the deception of Al Gore's DVD or video, An Inconvenient Truth. Al Gore, of course, is smart enough to know he's lying, but after all, he's not a man of integrity. He's been part of this world occult movement for many years. He was there in 1991 or 1992 when they laid out the plan for the Second Earth Summit, and, of course, he's been working ever since then to bring about this destruction of the middle class and, of course, then establishing the ruling class. Of course, he will be part of the ruling class. Right now, let's go to Gloria. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi, just fine. Hey, I just wanted to mention when Michael had mentioned the Wildlands Project, we just had a bill introduced this session in Washington State. It's called Y2Y, and it's Yukon to Yellowstone.
Yes.
And it was to establish a binational boundary between Canada from the Yukon all the way down to Yellowstone, and it's 2,000 miles long and between 150 and 500 miles wide, and Spokane, Washington, was supposed to be the capital city for the United States. And when we did our research, it was pretty easy to find, and there was much testimony presented about the Wildlands Project. So we are now working, and there's several different legislators from the various states, Idaho, Montana, Washington, that are working together to stop this because we felt that it was a domino effect. And
yes,
we did stop it from passing, but it did pass the Senate in our state, and it was going to pass if the House didn't take action and stop it.
Well, if I could suggest, certainly, if you're thinking about global warming, why Dr. Goffman's DVD is excellent, and for the whole idea of sustainable development, the Wildlands Project, you could certainly go to his website. He's got some excellent material there. And what is your regular website?
The other one was discerningtoday.org.
Right.
And we have the maps actually on the discerningtoday.org website and the EPI-US.com website. And both of those maps show basically what we put on the U.S. Senate floor to stop the treaty, but it's also what we gave to people in Washington State to help to stop this Y2Y bill that was going through, what, 2 months ago or 3 months ago?
February 27th was the hearing date.
Yeah.
Well, Gloria, I'm proud of you being able to stop that. We've just got to, you know, let the people know. And, of course, they put pressure on the legislators. And most of these legislators really don't have any idea what this whole is all about. And I might just simply mention, we have a syllabus called Sustainable Development, a talk, a four-tape set that goes with that. That's a DVD and a four-tape set. And the information is pretty well laid out. In fact, we even have one of Dr. Kaufman's essays in the back of my Sustainable Development syllabus. He was kind enough to let us use it, and it really gives you the overview of everything that's going on. Anything else you'd like to say, Gloria?
Would you just give me his website again, discerningtoday.com?
No, .org.
Oh, .org. Okay, thank you.
God bless.
Discerningtoday.org.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And let's go to Ed, who's calling from Calgary, Alberta. Hi, how you doing there?
I'm just doing fine, and so good to hear you again, Dr. Stan.
Are you listening on shortwave or internet?
I'm listening to shortwave. I'm the old school.
Okay, is that coming through pretty well?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I got the antenna rigged up. And what a super guest you have. Dr. Kaufman, good evening to you.
Good evening.
I've been doing nothing but writing notes down here, and I try not to hog the time here, but I got the carbon tax is going to deprive plants of food. DDT, remember that stuff?
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, since they put that away, we got beetle infestation, killing forests, the new insecticides are harmful, et cetera, et cetera. Sun tanning.
And basically have killed 60 million people because they no longer could use DDT.
Right.
For malaria.
And sun tanning, they discourage that. And I'm taking the vitamin D in the winter, and I'm getting my sun tan every time I hit the summer. And everybody thinks I'm crazy. Penicillin. I used to react real good to penicillin. I can't get the stuff even through a doctor.
No, you really can't. It's very hard anymore.
And it goes on and on and on. I just wanted to plug, if I may, three DVDs of Dr. Stan's, which I think are very, very compatible. Forbidden Secret, Planned Police State, and Alex Jones' Endgame. I got all three, and I'm making the rounds here with my friends, and they can't believe this stuff.
And, of course, you know, you have our permission to go ahead and copy them as long as you're not selling them. Go ahead and copy them. Get them out there. And I appreciate everything you're doing. Let me just put the plug in. Of course, one is the Planned Police State. One is the Forbidden Secret, which I think is important because it tells of the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. And, of course, right now, of course, it's being made public by Oprah Winfrey. So we've got to be at the end of history when certainly even CBS is putting out the information on the secret and telling you what it is. Well, not quite exactly what it is. They don't tell you, of course, it's that the real God is Lucifer, not the God that we worship, but the real God is Lucifer. But that is the essence, of course, of what Oprah and her friend Rhonda Burns are putting out. Hey, thanks very much. Of course,
Doctor. Thank you. And a good night, and to your guests, too.
Thank you so very much. And the third DVD that Ed mentioned was Endgame by Alex Jones, and it's really very, very well done. It goes into population control, and the part that the Bilderbergers, which is really a satanic organization, the part that they play in this whole picture. Well, certainly we have other callers coming on. If you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly we hope that every one of you out there in the listening audience will do what Ed is doing, and that is getting some of our DVDs, going ahead and copying them and getting them into other people's hands. And it's so vitally important because many times a DVD, people are not going to read to watch that, or if they want to read a book, why, of course, there's an excellent book that Dr. Kaufman has written. What's the title of the book again, Michael?
Saviors of the Earth,
Saviors of the Earth, and it's been around for, pretty close to 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been around for 10 years, but it's basically, it shows how we got where we are right now, and it's basically the information is as good today as it was when I wrote it 10 years ago, because it really does open your eyes as to how they all put this together to get where we are right now.
And that's one of those timeless books, and we certainly recommend it to you, that Saviors of the Earth, because these people, of course, really don't want to save the Earth. What they want to do is impoverish the middle class and, of course, have a two-class society. Well, a three-class society. One would be the elite. The second would be the government bureaucracy, the military, and the police. And then, of course, the third would be the feudal class, the serf class. Well, Let's go to Maggie, who's calling in from Texas. Hi, Maggie. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan and Mr. Kaufman.
Just speak right up. Don't be bashful.
Okay. I just wanted to call to your attention a book by Dixie Lee Ray, and I wondered if either of you were familiar with this because it speaks to exactly these issues. It was written in 1993, the year after that big summit, and she died the following year.
She wrote two books, and they're both excellent.
Excellent, yes, sure. Environmental Overkill. I just discovered that book, and I'd recommend it to anybody.
It's a very good book. It is a very good book. I knew Dixie Lee. We were on the same speaking tour circuit when she was still alive.
Yeah, she was a high-profile person, too.
Very personable, too.
Yeah, I believe I've met her myself. Now, there are things in that book I would disagree with. She seems to be all for big Agra, but I wonder if she would share those opinions today if she were alive.
I suspect she wouldn't. She was a pretty smart person, and I think she was quite willing to admit, that, of course, that she had had made a mistake in that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should mention that we actually carry a couple of her books. We still have them here available at Radio Liberty. If anybody would like to call in, they could order the books by Dixie Lee Ray, and there are two of them. And I think they're very important books. Hey, anything else you want to say, Maggie, before we let you go?
No, except that keep up the good work, both of you. I'm fans of both of you, and I listen at every opportunity.
God bless. And are you listening on shortwave or Internet?
Right now I'm listening on shortwave.
All right. Coming in pretty well?
It's coming in very well.
All right, fine. Thanks very much.
Okay, sure.
Bye-bye. Of course, keeping on shortwave is an expensive proposition, but we are able to reach people all across America with it. And so certainly we'd love to have it on for 2 hours in the evening. We only have it on for 1 hour, but this is the hour. So anyway, Chris, Michael, how are we going to reach people and get them to understand? Certainly the people who listen to my programs and hear you, I'm sure are convinced, of course, that this is a scam. And they know very well, of course, when they show somebody these pictures, the snow's melting on Kilimanjaro, but they don't tell you what part of the year they're taken, and the snows may be melting a little bit, but I suspect that every winter they get snow, and every summer the snow goes, but they show you the same view, and they say, look at how that this snow and ice are melting on Kilimanjaro. But
they've got that one pretty figured out. It's nothing to do with global warming and everything to do with land use.
Right. And, of course, then the polar bears, that's another one. Everybody loves the cuddly polar bears, and they're all going to be
hard out.
But my understanding is that we've got more polar bears than we've ever had.
Yes, all except there's 13 major populations in the world, and 11 of them are actually increasing, and there's a record numbers from when they really started to count them in the mid-1900s. And they are record numbers. They're three times the population as they were then. When it was a lot colder than it is right now, I might add. And there was more ice at that particular point in time. In fact, we've had some stuff come across our news desk in recent weeks to suggest that maybe the polar bears are really having a tough time this winter because there's too much ice up there in the Antarctic area. Or not,
in
the Arctic area, not Antarctic. So the polar bears have survived for the last 11,000 years, actually for the last, if you think of if you take the geologic time scale as being several million years old, for the last million years old, they have been through major glaciation periods and major interglacial periods in which it was 8 to 10 degrees warmer than it is right now. And they survived just fine. And here we're considering that using them as an endangered species, put them on the endangered species list, as another mechanism to get at our economy.
Well, I think it's vitally important that people understand what this is really all about. And when you understand, of course, that it is really an attack on the American economy, because, of course, in most European countries, this is not having an impact because they have nuclear energy. Now, you were at that meeting, weren't you, back east, put on by the Heartland first of the month? And certainly the former president, or I guess the present president of Czechoslovakia was there. What was his name? Vaclav something or other.
Yes, Vaclav, I think is his name. He grew up, of course, under communist regime. He knows all about communism, and he is horrified what he's seen this global warming thing doing. He's an economist, but he's also a scientist, and he recognizes that global warming is an absolute and bald-faced hoax. And basically, he told us very clearly that if we continue to go down the road that we're going to come under a regime not unlike that of communism, where you have a group of elite people totally in control of all the rest of us, and the rest of us are nothing but serfs in the lower income class, a very low income class, and there's no way to avoid this. If we continue to go the way we're going, he basically said that's what we're going to wind up with. There's no way of avoiding it.
I think it was really warning because of what had happened in Czechoslovakia when they came into the European Union. They had to abide by the Kyoto Protocol, and they didn't have that high, a wage level before. Their wages went down 40%, directly related, of course, to the Kyoto Protocol and, of course, his effort to cut back on hydrocarbon emissions. And he came all the way to the United States to warn us, don't make the mistake they've made here in Czechoslovakia. Our people are suffering. Well, Michael, why don't you go right ahead? You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you had mentioned, in the last 10 minutes, you mentioned how do we reach these people, and that was one of the reasons I created the DVD, Global Warming or Global Governance, and which you do sell. And what we have been getting back in comments on is that people who believe that man was causing global warming, because there's no other choice. If all you do is listen to the evening news and read your newspaper, that's what you're going to believe, because that's all you ever hear. And when they finally see the actual science, and realize that they have been taken to the cleaners and they've been lied to, they get very angry. But what really angers them is when we explain that the whole purpose is to create global governance and give the information as to why that is happening. This DVD covers both subjects, and it gets them angry. And if you really are going to start to have an influence on national policy, you have to get people to understand that they've been taken to the cleaners and that there is this agenda out there to create global governance. But once they realize there is nothing, absolutely nothing, to back up this man-caused global warming scare story, other than some very generalized circumstantial evidence, then they realize they have been lied to, and if they've been lied to on this subject, they must be lied to on others. And people are, that's what the kind of comments we're getting back, basically saying that every person in America should be watching this DVD.
Well, I certainly agree with that. That's why we're carrying it. I think it's probably the finest DVD that we have on this subject. I think it's one of the best educational tools. And for the people who are not going to sit down and read a book, let me recommend Dr. Michael Kaufman's DVD on global warming. Now, you have one other on global government. What's the title of that one?
The World Events and Prophecy one?
Right.
Yeah, that is the World Events and Prophecy. I did that last year, but it's still valid today for sure. Talks about biblical prophecy and what is happening in the world today that literally is fulfilling some of the prophecies of Daniel and John and Revelation and so forth. It is really astonishing. Most people do not understand, because they never see it in their newspaper, or if they do see it, it's disjointed and they don't recognize it, that prophecy is being fulfilled by the bucketfuls right now.
And I think that's really absolutely true. Once you understand, of course, the spiritual implications of what's going on, and that the people on the other side are doing everything they can to fulfill God's prophecies, whether they're doing this intentionally or unintentionally, I can't tell you. But I will tell you, they know the prophecies, they hate God, and they want to do everything they can, of course, to thwart his plan. And they will many times even write about, of course, how they are going to fulfill the prophecies of the rider of the pale horse, Revelation 6:8. But that's for another subject, another time. Anyway, Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been Michael Kaufman. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Michael Kaufman, certainly one of my favorite guests. He has the two DVDs that we carry. One is World Events and World Prophecy, and the other is on global warming. They're both available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a 4-tape set on global warming. We have two books. One is Climate Change, Al Gore, That's Climate Change a la Gorm. And the other is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming. We think both of these books are important, and we recommend them to you. Of course, we carry them so that you'll know where you can get the material, get the documentation, and understand that most of what you, well, all you're being told by the media about global warming is a simple lie, because the media is controlled. It's controlled by five mega corporations. The book that verifies that, that you can get through your library or through your local bookstore, is called The New Media Monopoly. It's written by Professor Ben Bekdikian. His publisher is doing everything that they can to discourage people from reading the book at the point that they will not give a significant discount at all to carry that book. We have in the past. But the book, The New Media Monopoly by Ben Bekdikian, simply points out that five mega corporations control 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in America today. And as a result, really control what the American people read and see and hear, and ultimately what the American people believe. So this is why, once you understand the media is controlled, you'll understand why every major media outlet tells you global warming is a reality and that there is no scientific objection other than the deniers. And, of course, it's all a lie. And if you want to get more information, Dr. Art Robinson's excellent website, that's Art Robinson. You can Google it in and get his material, the result of his petition that he circulated among the scientists of the world. And over 17, Dr. Kaufman says, 18,000 of those scientists who you know, have their PhDs, most of them in atmosphere or certainly in oceanography or the various things that have to do with the weather, and they all agree it's all a scam. Yes, there is global warming, but it's because of the changes in the sun. And just as 1,000 years ago, Greenland was green, perhaps it'll be green again before this cycle is over. We'll just have to wait and see if we do not move, of course, into a new global cooling, which, of course, is what many people were worried about. And 30 years ago, the same people who were proclaiming we had global cooling and we had to have more government control are suggesting now that we have global warming and now we need more government control. But it's all about government control. Let me put a pitch in for the DVDs that Ed had called. Ed from Calgary had talked about, and Ed had talked about The End Game. It's a DVD put out by Alex Jones. It goes into population control, and of course the Bilderbergers, one of these elite groups that rule, made up the financiers and the elite group who rule the world. And then, of course, I should talk about our four-tape set on satanic crimes, because this goes into the Bilderbergers as well. And the book, Satanic Crimes, is a four-tape set, a four-CD set, and, of course, the book, Satanic Crimes, tells you about the Bilderbergers and how, of course, the people of Europe were furious when, because of the pedophilia and satanic activities of the members of the Bilderbergers, and not one word in the American media. And then Ed also talked about our DVD on the Forbidden Secret. And let me suggest that. It comes with a syllabus. And there is a secret. It's been around for 5,000 years. And if you tap into the power of this secret, you can get great wealth and fame and power and fortune at the cost of your eternal soul. And lastly, of course, he had mentioned my Planned Police State DVD, and of course that comes with the syllabus as well. We think all of these things are important, and if you get them and get other people to watch them or copy them and get them to watch them, help us get the word out. That's your job. I can only talk to so many people, but you can reach a lot of people. Incidentally, if you'd like to get our newsletter, you can subscribe to it and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our newsletter. But you can get it by email, and that way you can readily send it to your friends. So we'll be back here in just a moment. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Bale. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, right now, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who was at one time the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and today is working with the Wealth Society. He is writing his own blog. He's written a new book, Liberty in Eclipse. That's Liberty in Eclipse, and we do carry the book. We think it's an important book, and you'll certainly want to get the blog material that William is putting out. But right now, of course, let's get to William, certainly one of our favorite guests, and we're pleased to have him with us a couple of times a week here at Radio Liberty. Hi, William. How are you tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me again.
All right, fine. Well, what are we going to be talking about?
I don't see any way that we could avoid talking about what's going on in Texas right now with the seizure of 416 children.
Speak up just a little louder, or just a little soft?
Sure. I don't see how we can avoid talking about what's going on in Texas with the seizure of 416 children from an admittedly eccentric and unsavory sect. And the decision that was handed down today by the judge, Judge Walther, to continue the state custody of these children in spite of the fact that as of Wednesday it was clear that the original phone call that was made purporting to be a 16-year-old who was being abused by a polygamous husband was a complete hoax. I just think that it's a monumental injustice and something that should properly terrify everybody who belongs to a church that might be considered one half of a bubble off plum from the perspective of people whose idea of Christianity is simply to wave the flag and support the regime that rules us irrespective of what it does. I mean, there are a lot of people who are perfectly doctrinally orthodox who look a whole lot like the people in this FLDS church down in West Texas. Actually, the church itself is headquartered in a border-straddling community in southern Utah and northern Arizona. And it's an offshoot of the mainstream Mormon church, which doesn't have any institutional connection to the FLDS church. They're at pains to point that out whenever they're asked about it. But if you take a look at the photographs of the women who've been deprived of their children because of this raid which took place earlier this month, they were seized literally at gunpoint from the mothers and separated from them in what must have been a horrible scene. They were all taken to a nearby facility called the Coliseum, the mothers and the children. The mothers were sent into one room, the children were sent into another, and they had been promised, the mothers had, by child protection officials. And, of course, when I use that phrase, I put protection in mocking air quotes. The mothers had been assured that they would be reunited with their children, and as they went into this room, they were told, no, your children are ours. That was literally what they were told. Your children are ours. And they're going to remain in state custody. You cannot see them again until we give you permission to see them. And in this room, according to a couple of accounts that I have seen and read from people who were present, you had over 100 heavily armed police officers who were there to make sure that these mothers didn't act on the understandable instinct to go back and comfort the children who were being delivered into the hands of armed strangers who would attack their home. And now we've had, over the last couple of days, this farce of a trial. Now, it's not a trial, actually. It's a judicial hearing, a preliminary hearing, under the district judge who issued several warrants to conduct this raid on this insular religious community near San Angelo, Texas. That judge was confronted with a mob of attorneys. I mean, there are literally hundreds of attorneys present representing hundreds and hundreds of people who are party to this seizure. And she made a decision that, in spite of the fact that the warrants were utterly bogus, the original warrant was based on third-party hearsay that supposedly confirmed the existence, didn't even bother to confirm the existence of the 16-year-old girl, but it was supposedly an account from the 16-year-old girl who said that she had been made pregnant at 15, that she was pregnant again, that her polygamous husband was about 50 years old, and that he routinely subjected her to physical abuse and emotional mistreatment, and that she had been to the hospital. All kinds of things they could have done by way of confirming some element of this account, but this was never done. This judge issued the warrant on the basis of, once again, third-party hearsay. And then, in spite of the fact that that fell apart on Wednesday when the person who was apparently the source of this fraudulent phone call was arrested in Colorado City, with the Texas Rangers present, they had tracked down the source of that phone call. In spite of the fact that the legal basis of that warrant was now completely moot, the judge today ruled that they would keep these children in custody. And that means that they're probably never going to be released from state custody until they're of majority age.
Well, I think you have to understand why that is, and because, of course, there's a federal subsidy for every child that they can take from a family, every child that they can take away from their parents, no matter how legitimate their parents may be. And I'll tell you that you might have a 15-year-old girl who has had a child, but she would love that child because it's her mm-hmm. child. You put them into a foster home, you destroy that child, and of course, there's no opportunity, ever again to get back together into a family situation. But the federal government actually subsidizes the destruction of homes all across America, and these communities will get somewhere between $5,000 and $25,000 a year for actually destroying homes. And until we cut off those federal subsidies, until we take away that money from the federal government that's being used to destroy children and to destroy parents and to destroy families, and certainly I don't agree with polygamy. I think it's a terrible situation. But they don't have to, they could simply break up the community, but they could still let the mothers have their children. The mothers haven't committed a crime. The children haven't committed a crime. The crime was committed by the judge, in my estimation, and by the police officers who went in there without a valid warrant.
Obviously, that has to be the conclusion that any rational person who's got a scintilla of knowledge about how due process is supposed to work under a constitutional system would reach, is that the real crime here was one committed under the color of state authority. And it's worthwhile to point out that the FLDS Church would probably not be the problem that it has become were it not being subsidized itself by the federal government through various welfare programs in both Arizona and Utah that receive block grants from the federal government, and also by the state governments of both Arizona and Utah. The FLDS Church in the Colorado City half of the border straddling community there on the border with Utah actually had a school district that was being subsidized by the Arizona state government. They were able to get hundreds of thousands of dollars in surpluses and build an endowment of a sufficient size that they could buy an airplane so that the rulers of the FLDS commune there would be able to conduct business. And some of the business they conducted involved building parts for motor vehicles on a concessionary contract with the Pentagon. They were getting a huge amount of money.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with a special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is William Grigg, and we're talking about what happened there when the federal government went in and seized over 400 children. And you know, I don't agree with polygamy. I don't believe in this cult sort of thing. But you know, as far as the 14-year-old girl having a child, well, it's a lot better than having an abortion, which of course would happen in our society. And of course, years ago, women started having children at a very, very young age. It was not unusual that a 13 or 14-year-old girl would have a child, but they would be married. And of course, I certainly think that these people are being exploited. But why punish the people who've been exploited? Why punish the children? And that's what they're doing.
Exactly. And once again, we were talking about the structure, the ruling structure of the oligarchy that was presiding over the FLDS Church, which was a pretty much insular, endogamous community that was entirely enclosed and able to subsist in large measure because of the subsidies they were receiving from various welfare programs in Utah and in Arizona. And also this no-bid contract they got with the Pentagon, which was very lucrative to build. I believe they were building parts for vehicles.
Why would the Pentagon give a no-bid contract to a polygamous group?
That's a very good question. I've not been able to find out exactly what happened there, but it's the sort of thing that happens very frequently when you have no-bid contracts being handed out and tens of billions of dollars sluicing around to all and sundry. And, of course, the labor costs were very low, and that would make them attractive as a contractor. But what we know from the occupation of Iraq and the so-called reconstruction of that country under U.S. control, the people who are in charge of handing out contracts to the Pentagon really aren't all that careful about finding the lowest bid. Often they just go in for people who have political connections. And I wouldn't doubt for a second that at some level, you would have some political pull on the part of the FALDS community here, because they do have influence with government elements of the governments in both Arizona and Utah. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to run their own police department. They had a state-certified police department. It was certified, I think, entirely by the state of Utah, in spite of the fact that they had jurisdiction that went across the border into Arizona. And you had a situation where Warren Jeffs, the 51-year-old so-called prophet of this community, was able to use this state-certified and state-funded police department to punish followers who rebelled against his purported authority. He would be able, for instance, to evict people from their homes, to confiscate their properties, to confiscate all their wealth, because all their wealth, all their land, was controlled by a financial entity called the United Effort Plan Trust, which was controlled by Jeffs and his cadre. And so they were able to use the police in order to carry out and enforce the conditions of that economic arrangement. And Jeffs also claimed the right to arrange marriages, and that included redistributing the wives of followers in the way that he felt was suitable. So if somebody had been in some way insubordinate, Jeffs claimed the right and the power, and this is something that was backed up by the police force there in Hilldale, Utah, in Colorado City, to take wives from people who had rebelled against them and assign them to more loyal followers. And that's the sort of thing that only happens when you've got a government apparatus that supports the dictates of a cult leader of this sort. But yeah, these were people who were doing things that I consider to be flatly horrible. If you take a look at the leadership elite of the FLDS Church, I don't know how I'd go about assigning culpability to people who are merely followers, the men who are merely followers of this man and his teachings. The teachings, of course, are facially unsupportable. And when you have a man who is in his 40s or 50s contracting an illicit marital union with a young teenage girl, I think that it's a horrible thing. It's statutory rape in a lot of communities, not necessarily in Texas. That's one reason they built their commune down in Texas, is because the age of consent with parental permission in Texas at the time they moved there a couple of years ago was 14. And the state legislature, working with the representative in the specific district where the FLDS built their commune, worked to change the law with the specific intent of criminalizing the marital practices of this group. Now, I think those practices were abhorrent. I have no brief for any of their teachings, but I would point out that what we're talking about here is a bill of attainder. It was a measure that was targeted at a specific community to criminalize something that was not criminal when they were doing it. And that happened a couple of years ago. And starting back in 2005, 2006, there was a methodical plan put into effect, the culmination of which just occurred in the last week of last month and the first week of this month, when they had a pretext to move against this community and confiscate their children. And Dr. Stan, you're entirely correct when you talk about the corrupt economics of the foster care system and the fact that these federal subsidies create a perverse incentive for breaking up families, whether they're healthy or dysfunctional, and consigning these children to a system that is very, very dangerous. The people who testified in the court hearing down in Texas over the last couple of days were not able to define in any tangible way a threat of immediate abuse or impairment regarding the children who were taken from that community. They didn't say that they found any evidence of abuse. They were talking about the possibility of future abuse. In other words, it's a type of preemptive warfare again. They're imputing to this community a tendency to abuse people on the basis of the beliefs of the people who run that community. And so, in a fashion akin to what we saw in that movie Minority Report, they're talking about enforcing a sort of doctrine of pre-crime. They're assuming that some unspecified time in the future, an unspecified number of children in this community are going to be subject to abuse, and on that basis, they're going to take them out of that community and separate them from their parents and put them into a foster care system that one of the experts in the state of Texas today admitted on the stand in sworn testimony that it would be dangerous and destructive to put these children in the foster care system in Texas. And in doing so, he's just admitting the obvious. A couple of years ago, starting in about 2004, the state comptroller's office in Texas tried to conduct a system-wide investigation of the foster care system in Texas. In every state of the union, the foster care system is broken. There's not a state in the union where the foster care system works very well. There are good people who sign up to be foster parents, but it's the nature of the bureaucracy to reward people who are not diligent and to put children in dangerous environments. And so starting in 2004, the state of Texas tried to conduct this system-wide review, and they found out some things that are perfectly horrifying. For instance, in the foster care system in Texas, you actually have a tendency to see child rape take place involving victims between 12 and 15 years of age. That's supposedly the social cohort that's most at risk in the FLDS community, the girls between ages of 12 and 15. But 13% of the victims, we're talking about hundreds of victims in the year 2004, were 3 years old or younger. That's in the state-run foster care system in the state of Texas. And in that system, according to the findings, once again, of this study that was commissioned by the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, a child being raised in the foster care system is 4 times more likely to die of criminal violence than a child in the general population. Now, that's the system that's going to be protecting these kids. They were in, I think, once again, admittedly, a bad environment in terms of the theology and in terms of some elements of the morality being taught. But they were being raised fairly responsibly. The girls were being taught to be chaste and modest in their dress. They were healthy. They were avoiding a lot of the nutritional landmines that are strewn about in the path of most children today. They were respectful, well-presented. They were apparently very well-socialized because they were not reacting to strangers as if the strangers were threatening. They're being taken out of that environment, out of an environment where they have mothers who love them and provide for them, and being put into a foster care system where they're at least 4 times likelier to encounter potentially lethal danger. And that's something which is being done in the name of protecting these children. But as you pointed out, the real subtext here is the fact that there is this very lucrative stream of subsidies from the federal government, the purpose of which is precisely to break up families and to enrich the coffers of the child welfare bureaucracy.
And I think it's so interesting that that study you're talking about, my understanding is that it was really doing such a good job exposing the corruption and the danger of the foster care system that the governor discontinued the study and nothing was ever done.
After about a year and a half, they just slammed the door shut and wouldn't let Carolyn Strayhorn, who was the official in the comptroller's office bird dogging this investigation, didn't give her any more access to the data because it was becoming such a resounding indictment of that system. And in spite of the fact that there was this cover-up, there's no other way to describe it, one of the experts today on the stand in Texas was forced to admit that this is a more dangerous environment for the FLDS Church than the one that they were, for the children from the FLDS Church, than the one they were being raised in. And so they've got no excuse for what they're doing. And the legal excuse here is even worse. Supposedly, once again, we've got to go back and take a look at the supposed phone call from the 16-year-old Sarah. They never found her. They never really made an effort to find her because I'm quite satisfied that they knew that she wasn't there. They knew that Sarah no more existed than the drug lab supposedly existed on the premises of the Branch Davidians back in 1993. If you recall, one of the reasons why it was supposedly necessary to conduct a full-force raid by the ATF in February of 1993 was because there had been a meth lab on the premises at Mount Carmel. And, of course, that's nonsense. There had been a meth lab there before the Branch Davidians occupied that property. They got rid of it. They cleaned it up. The Branch Davidians were an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. They were people who live a very abstemious lifestyle. The Seventh-day Adventists have a very healthy standard of living. They follow a dietary program that's quite commendable, and it tends to conduce toward longevity. It, among other things, prescribes the use of alcohol and, of course, narcotics. So these people were clean living. They had nothing to do with drugs. But on the basis of that phony allegation, you had a military nexus that was created to justify the full-force raid against the Branch Davidians in 93.
And don't forget about, of course, the stories we heard about how the when Saddam Hussein's forces invaded Iraq, how they were taking the little children,
exactly,
throwing them out of the bassinets and bayoneting them. And it was all contrived. There was no truth to the stories at all. But the American people, of course, believed it because, after all, I mean, we were told this. In fact, a little girl testified before the Senate and said that this is what happened. Of course, she didn't. It was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. Nobody ever brought that out. It was all a lie, but so much of what we hear today is a lie.
Yeah, that's one thing we can be sure of is that they never stop lying. And I have to go back again to something I adverted to earlier, which was the Branch Davidian situation where they supposedly had a meth lab on site, and that's why it was supposedly necessary for the ATF to liaise with the National Guard in the state of Texas under Governor Ann Richards, and also to get help from the DEA and a couple of other the alphabet soup agencies that are in the business of waging war on the American public. And when they attacked the Branch Davidian church, it was always referred to as a compound, you remember. That's bad news. If they ever refer to your house as a compound, you can be sure they're going to attack it. When the Branch Davidian church was attacked in February of 1993 by the ATF, the ATF agents who conducted that raid were dressed for a made-for-television production, but they didn't bring along any of their mop suits, their chemical warfare suits, if you will, to deal with the residue that would be created if you're throwing flash bang grenades into an environment where there's a meth lab with highly volatile and thoroughly toxic chemicals inside. They didn't have any of the type of gear that would be necessary to deal with the aftermath of a firefight in an environment where a meth lab wouldn't be present. So they knew that that was bogus. And in the same sense, with the attack on the FLDS just this last couple of weeks, they knew, they had to have known, that the phone call from this Sarah was bogus. Here's what happened, apparently. There's a young lady, actually a 33-year-old adult, by the name of Rosita Swinton from Colorado Springs, Colorado, who has been in the habit of making bogus phone calls to the police, posing as a victim of child abuse. She has a rap sheet, apparently. What we've discovered the last couple of days is that she had made a phone call, apparently, to Flora Jessup, who's a former member of the FLDS Church. She's left that church. Now she's become an outspoken critic of that church, and she works with people who are trying to leave that community, particularly young women who don't want to become polygamous brides. I think that's a very commendable thing to do, but her perceptions are that because the FLDS Church does operate, has operated in classic cultic fashion, that it really should be treated as a danger to the community and a danger to the people who are adherents of that religion. She has a defensible perspective, I think, but I think that she may be somewhat short-sighted in terms of what that would mean in terms of government policy. But she received a phone call from this woman professing to be a 16-year-old named Sarah, who was being abused by her polygamous husband. Flora Jessup contacted the officials in Texas, and the officials in Texas sent the Rangers to talk to Flora Jessup and had her record the phone calls from this so-called Sarah. The story was that Sarah was borrowing somebody's cell phone, that she had to speak furtively and only in quick staccato bursts because she was being watched by her abusive husband or by people who were loyal to him. But what happened is that the Texas Rangers were able to find out on the basis of the recordings made by Flora Jessup that these phone calls came from Colorado Springs. So they went to Colorado Springs and they got in touch with the local police officials. And they were able to trace the phone calls back to this Rosita Swinton. And she was arrested on Wednesday night on charges having to do with a previous fraudulent phone call. We don't know whether or not she had something to do, or rather, whether the charges against her had something to do, rather, with these phone calls she made to Flora Jessup, because the case against her has been sealed by a judge, and we'll probably never get the details. But it's very, very suggestive, nonetheless, that the Texas Rangers were present when she was arrested. They had traced the phone calls back to her. Now, this was all known on Wednesday before the court hearings began on Thursday morning. The first order of business...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back with William Craig. Okay, Dr. Stan and Chris William is simply pointing out that the Texas Rangers, to their credit, had actually tracked down the woman who had put the call in. In other words, there's... calls were made to a woman, an activist, who was helping people get out of the this branch of the LDS Church, and of course they had actually traced the calls supposedly from an 18-year-old or 16-year-old who was trying to let people know about the abuse that was going on at the compound, and it turned out that, of course, that was a woman in Colorado. Was it in Colorado Springs? Where did she live?
Yeah, Colorado Springs.
All right, fine. Anyway, she was making the whole thing up, as far as we can tell. But, of course, that meant that the warrant that was used to go into the compound was fraudulent. But that didn't matter to the judge.
No.
They wanted an excuse to break it up. Now, if they really wanted to move against it, they could have. But they should have done it legally,
mm-hmm.
not illegally, is what they did. And they could have done it without going in with the SWAT team and without taking the children away from their mothers. And that, of course, what's unforgivable, is taking the children away from their mothers. What harm will that do to the child for the rest of their life? They'll never forget the fear of being taken away from their parents and put into protective custody. Innocent children are being harmed. And the question is, who's being harmed the most? Go right ahead, William.
Exactly. They're being harmed in a way that I think may be irreparable, because they had been taught and frequently had this point reiterated and made part of a all-encompassing program of indoctrination, that the outside world was seeking to destroy them, that they, the elect, were under siege from the outside world, and that they really couldn't talk to the Gentiles, Gentiles being a term used to describe everybody who's not part of the FLDS Church. And in spite of this, their natural decency and the fact that they had been raised in a loving environment made them apparently very receptive to talking to people who were from the outside. They would have a certain caginess about them. They probably wouldn't be as exuberant and outgoing and gregarious with people who are not part of their movement as they would be with people within it. But the reports that I've read suggest that they were not only cooperative, they were very friendly and very polite and respectful to the people who came with the sheriff in the first effort that was made to try to track down this Sarah. He said that they were very amenable to dealing with him. He said they were very accommodating. Strangely enough, he said they were accommodating but not cooperative. I don't know how you would say that somebody can be accommodating without being cooperative, but the sheriff was trying, apparently, to put the worst possible construction on every encounter he had with these people. But these children, in any case, had been taught from the time they were old enough to understand that they were being taught something, that the outside world was one of monolithic, unreconstructed evil, that there were these people outside who sought to destroy the people of God, would be the members of the FLDS Church there. And now you have the state government of Texas reinforcing that idea by tearing these children by violence away from their mothers. And I don't know how they're going to recover from that. I don't know how they'll be able to surmount this experience and actually come to understand that although the world is full of evil, the world is also full of good and decent people. And so it'll probably drive them even more deeply into a mindset that's one of pretty much a fortified hostility against the world outside of their little commune. And that's something that I think you don't have to be a child welfare expert in order to understand. I think you just have to have some rudimentary understanding of human nature. But you go back once again to this affidavit, which was sworn out by a member of the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers historically have been one of the few law enforcement agencies for which I've had any respect, because by and large they have conducted themselves with great professionalism and tried where possible to minimize the possibility of violence. They actually have conducted themselves like peace officers, and historically they've done a pretty good job. I think they did a good job in this instance in tracking down the source of this bogus phone call. But the affidavit, which was sworn out by a member of the Texas Rangers, deals with second-party hearsay. She was hearing, the Texas Rangers swore out the affidavit, from Flora Jessup what this other person was saying about what was supposedly happening to her. And the affidavit is full of stark falsehoods. They're trying to say that they'd actually identified who this person was and that we're able to locate her within this commune, this so-called YFZ, Yearning for Zion Ranch. That wasn't true. They didn't know her. They'd never spoken with her. The only contact the Rangers had was by way of Flora Jessup with the person we end up knowing as Rosita Swinton. And so what should have happened first thing Thursday morning when Judge Walter gaveled the proceedings open, the first thing she should have done, had she been an actual judge, you know, somebody who's acting as a constitutional officer, would have been to look at the state representatives and say, bring me Sarah. Prove that she exists. Prove that your victim exists. Or I'm dismissing this outright for lack of cause.
Will you hold that thought? We're going to be back in just a moment with William Gregg as we explore how the legal system is being circumvented in the name of justice. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I'm sure that many people would say, well, after all, it was a terrible thing. It was a terrible polygamous cult, and therefore we should not, we can justify this miscarriage of justice because the end justifies the means.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, once you begin doing that, you get the total breakdown of the very structure of our law that protects each and every one of us. We have to abide by these laws. If we do not, why, we're laying ourselves open to moral anarchy.
Well, what people need to understand about the whole purpose of having a constitution and the whole purpose of having a republic being a system of government in which the government itself is ruled by fixed laws and accountable to the people, is that a constitutional republic is all about the means. You have to define the means that are used by the government in order to achieve the ends, which we talk about in the preamble to our Constitution. The ends, of course, have to do with increasing the sphere of human liberty and the realm in which people can develop the talents that God has given us. And, of course, one of the paramount purposes, one of the paramount ends of having a government in the first place is not only to protect individual rights, but to protect those institutions which were created by God to regulate and to bring happiness and productivity to human existence, and the most important of those is the family. Now, what we're dealing with here in the FLDS Church is a system that is looked upon as having one entire household headed by a patriarch, presiding patriarch, this fellow Warren Jeffs, who's now in prison on charges of abetting the rape. He was the rape of an underage girl by arranging a marriage between an underage girl and a polygamous husband. In other words, he's in jail basically as an accomplice to rape, and he's facing additional charges. And I think there's a pretty good case to be made that that's exactly what he did. But what they're trying to say is that this entire community is one extended household, and because this entire community is one extended household, we have to evacuate all the children out of this entire household, separate them from the mothers, because we don't know who the fathers would be. Now, if you play that out logically and apply it to the society at large, there are huge numbers of people who are in suboptimal family situations, whether you're talking about divorce, whether you're talking about tragedies such as the death of a father, death of a mother, whether you're talking about separations because of problems in a marriage, whether you're talking about temporary health problems or emotional problems or some other type of turmoil that is temporarily sundered a marriage that is amenable to being repaired. You're talking about situations here where if you apply the principles of what's been done to the FLDS...
Hold that thought for just a minute. We bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is just saying that if you... Certainly the patriarch of this community has been put in jail for arranging a marriage with an underage girl, and of course then he would become an accomplice to rape. And this might very well be justified, and probably he will be tried and convicted. But why punish the children? Why punish the mothers? And that's what they're doing. In other words, all they had to do, if they knew that these things were going on, is go in and arrest the patriarch.
Mm-hmm.
But you do not have a right to seize all of these children and put them into foster homes, you know, because you don't like the patriarch. But yes, you can arrest the patriarch, you can try the patriarch, but, of course, what we're doing is punishing the women who are there and, most of all, destroying the lives of those children. That's
yeah.
What's so unconscionable.
Yeah, and the principles that they're developing, the precedents that are being set, are very dangerous for people who are living in less than ideal family circumstances throughout the country. And one of the things that has been done over the course of many decades of aggressive hostility on the part of the state in the cultural arena is to amplify and propagate the type of problems that break up families on the assumption that by breaking up the families, they're creating more business for the child welfare bureaucracy. And this is a program that goes all the way back to our good friends in the Fabian Socialist Movement. In my book that came out in 1995, Freedom on the Altar, there's a section that deals with the writings of H.G. Wells, who was a science fiction author, but more importantly, he was one of the big promoters of the Fabian movement. The Fabian Socialist Movement, for those who aren't acquainted with it, was designed to use the instruments of the democratic political system to bring about a socialist revolution rather than staging violence of a revolutionary sort that would destroy the existing political structure and then to rebuild a dictatorship from the ground up. The Fabian socialists preferred incrementalism. They wanted to have a long march through the institutions. That's what Antonio Gramsci, who wasn't a Fabian, but he pursued a variation on that strategy, the Italian communist theorist, called the long march through the institutions. That's a Fabian strategy. The Fabian strategy is to take a little bit of the time where you can get it and hopefully to get people to vote themselves into slavery. But way back in 1919, H.G. Wells wrote a book called New Worlds for Old, and he used that book to talk about retrofitting into the existing British welfare system the ideals of Fabian socialism. And what he talked about here is the idea that socialism, and I'm quoting now from Wells, comes not to destroy but to save the family through government intervention. He said, socialism regards parentage under proper safeguards as not only a duty but a service to the state, that is to say, it proposes to pay for good parentage, in other words, to endow the home. And the program was that the Fabians suggested the government should provide direct subsidies to mothers, not to fathers, but to the mothers. Now, when I read that, I said, that's brilliant, because what you're doing is you're cutting the father out of the scheme in the home, and you're making the state the surrogate father, and making the mother, really, sort of a consort of the state. What I contend is that socialism, as a matter of social policy with respect to the families and children of a given society, is, if you will, a species of polygamy. Because what they are doing is they are using federal subsidies or government subsidies from the central government in whatever country you're talking about to make the mother the consort of the state. And this is done, according to Wells, in order to give government the leverage in order to take direct control over the children. This is what he wrote. Neglect the children, ill-treat them, prove incompetent, and your pay will cease, and we shall take them away from you and do what we can for them. And that was written in 1919, and some very similar things were said by Arthur Calhoun, who was an American social scientist, in a book that he published in 1913 called The Social History of the American Family. So you have parallel tracks going here in the United States and in Great Britain, and both of them worked on the assumption that the entire society should be treated as one large household presided over by the government in its role as parens patriae, which is the Latin phrase meaning the fatherhood of the entire society. And so when you have intervention of the sort that took place in Texas where they're treating this entire insular community as one extended household, you've got the government acting in essentially the same role as Warren Jeffs. You know, Warren Jeffs was sort of a state within a state here. He'd created a state within a state that replicated in many ways the same kind of a system that the government of the United States has been building for many decades. And in the system that Warren Jeffs and his followers created, the children were still attached to their natural mothers, and they're still being raised in a household environment where they had the advantage of kinfolk who loved them and traditions that they chose to believe in. And they were pretty much doing no injury to anybody outside of their little realm. That, to their considerable credit, the FLDS mini-government, you know, the imperium within an imperium, so to speak, was not inflicting itself on anybody beyond its own domain. Now, that's certainly not true of the government that rules over us. I mean, the government that rules over us has the conceit that it has sovereignty over every breathing human being on the planet over whom it can exercise its authority, either through the imperialism of the dollar or by dropping humanitarian bombs and making large freedom holes in the middle of residential neighborhoods. And so the subcontractors in Texas, of this administrative unit of our Leviathan government, decided that they were going to invade this household and seize these children. And they did so on the basis of a completely spurious warrant. I mean, the warrant makes extravagant claims to know things that simply were not known. And we know, of course, now that the phone call that triggered this was completely spurious. It had to have been known to the authorities when they went in and seized those children. It was certainly known to the judge Thursday morning. And really, she should have demanded or issued a type of habeas corpus writ. A habeas corpus means present the body. In this case, they should have presented the living, breathing body of this Sarah within a very abrupt and inflexible time limit. And failing that, the case should have been thrown out for want of legitimacy to the warrant, and somebody should have been brought up on on charges, contempt charges, for filing a bogus affidavit that led to this spurious warrant. But the fact that Judge Barbara Walther, who's been presiding over this farce of a hearing, didn't see fit to do any of that Thursday morning, told me right away that the fix was in, that she was simply going to go through the motions of listening to the attorneys representing the FLDS side of things and make every accommodation to the state that was necessary in order to make sure that the state retained control over those children. That's exactly what happened. It surprises me not one whit, but it infuriates me nonetheless.
Well, all we can do is just note what's going on and hope and pray that those children are returned to their mothers, but I would really rather doubt that it's going to happen. I doubt it because there's so much money at stake, and since as long as the federal government is going to subsidize the destruction of the family, why, of course, people are going to take advantage of it. And imagine 400 times $5,000 a year. Why, that gets to be quite a bit of money.
And that's really what it boils down to here, is that there are people who live at public expense in Texas who are going to be using these children as a source of revenue. And I can't think of anything more contemptible than to destroy the life of a child for money. I mean, there are other reasons that are quite loathsome as well. I mean, there are children being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan right now in wars that have no colorable justification and are being waged without constitutional warrant and being waged in ways that are making people miserable on all sides, that's certainly a loathsome thing to do. And you could say that there are pecuniary interests involved in those assaults as well. But here you have people who purport to be activists working on behalf of the interests of children. People are supposedly motivated by compassion and solicitude for the most innocent among us, who are pimping these children. That's literally what they're doing. They're using their bodies as a source of revenue. It fills me with the most unspeakable contempt, and it's of a piece with things that are going on elsewhere in this country. Just have here a particularly egregious example that's not getting anything like the type of coverage it deserves and not inspiring anywhere near the amount of outrage that is warranted by the situation.
I agree with you totally, William. I share your concerns, and I think it's the principle of the thing more than anything.
Yeah.
And certainly, had they wanted, well, it was like with the Davidians, had they really wanted to get David Koresh, they would have knocked on the door and said, David Koresh, you're under arrest. Of course, that would have been the end of it. They did not want that. They wanted this spectacular thing. They wanted, you know, they had the cameras were there. They wanted to have an issue to make the BATF look good, and they ended up killing an awful lot of people. And I talked to Sarah Blaine, who was the head of the jury that tried the Davidians, and she said the wrong people were on trial. We didn't want the Davidians, any of them, sent to prison. You know, it should have been the government officials that went to prison. And I think, of course, we're seeing this thing carried out again and again and again. And government officials are never held responsible for what they do. But, of course, they're going to, if they do not answer here in this world, they're going to have to answer in the next world. Because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And it doesn't matter whether you're a citizen or whether you're wearing a badge. You are still answerable to God.
That's certainly the case. And, of course, Jesus taught that he would harm one of these little ones, who would offend one of these little ones who believes in me. It's better for him than a millstone be hanged around his neck and drowned in the depths of the sea. I mean, you're dealing here with 416 innocent children of various ages. Some of them are teenagers. Some of them are in their early teens, their adolescent years. And you have, in this instance, many of the same principles, many of the same players who were involved in the Branch Davidian debacle back in 1993. I believe the chief spokeswoman for the Department of Family and Protective Services in Texas is the same individual who was carrying out that role in 1993. The so-called cult expert and the so-called psychiatrist, child psychiatrist, who have had unrestricted access to these children, performed those same functions back in 1993 after the children were some of the children were taken out of the Branch Davidian sanctuary prior to April 19th and the immolation of those innocents. That's an anniversary that we're marking with great solemnity tomorrow. I hope it'll be remembered, in addition to, of course, 1775, the shot fired around the world, and the bombing of Oklahoma City on April 19th, 1995, and the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto under the Nazi regime. April really is a month that's somewhat clotted with events and anniversaries, some of them quite inspiring and others quite sorrowful, and fewer more sorrowful than what happened to the Branch Davidians.
In fact, it's really very interesting. I have a friend of mine who was deeply involved with the occult for 20 years, and he mentions that April 19th is a special high holy day for people involved in the occult, and of course they always like to do their sacrifices on that date. And it is, isn't it interesting that that was the date of the Waco massacre, the date of the bombing of the Murrah Building, and well, go right ahead with the story.
Yeah, all those horrible events that we think about when we are given the some time for reflection on April 19th. I remember my first reaction. I was in Seattle, Washington on April 19th, 1995 when the bombing took place. And I was on a speaking tour, and I got to my hotel room and turned on CNN to see what was happening in the world. The first thing I saw was the unforgettable spectacle, the Murrah Building, with that large asymmetrical cavity carved out, supposedly by a truck bomb, but of course with the help of some supplementary explosives, almost certainly. And I remember thinking, okay, this is April 19th, and I know how this is going to be presented to the public. It's going to be presented to the public as an object lesson in the dangers of being critical of government, because we're going to be told that it's done by people who were simply the impersonal actors of this precipitating anti-government hostility that had really grown quite acute in the early years of the Clinton administration. That's exactly what the Clintonoids did. I mean, a couple of weeks later, Bill Clinton, who was coming home, he was in Montana. He'd just come back from celebrating the victory of Joseph Stalin in World War II. He'd gone to Russia, as I said at the time, he'd gone to Russia to reacquaint himself with his political heritage. And he came back to Montana, and he gave the most repellently fascinating speech, where he talked about the fact that there were people who had been criticizing the federal government. He said, when you hear people do that, and he made reference to the Oklahoma City bombing in this context, when you hear people criticizing the government, you have to double up your fist and stick it in the sky and shout them down. He said he'd just gotten back from Moscow, so it was certainly suitable that he'd be talking in terms and tones that are more appropriate to that, to a commissar than a president. But that's pretty much the attitude that was propagated by the Clinton administration in reaction to the Oklahoma City bombing. The idea being that the real danger is when people start bad-mouthing the government, acting as though the government was acting against the interests of the public, which, of course, is what our government does almost incessantly. And now we have this horrible incident unfolding in Texas, and because we don't see the spectacle of a burning church, where we know that 17 or more children are being immolated as a result of government action, people aren't quite as mad about this as they should be. It's amazing how Waco has sort of recalibrated our capacity for outrage. Unless we actually have children being cremated on live television as a result of the FBI's actions, people don't believe that we're dealing with something that is an outrage and an atrocity. But unfortunately, we're in real time right now seeing the flat-out stealing, the theft of these hundreds of children by one of the most corrupt and murderous social service agencies in the country, and they're going to pimp these children out in a literal way in order to make money off of these harmless. You've got to, not only are they harmless, you've got to think that they're terrified kids.
Yes, and they are simply victims in this whole yeah, tragic scenario. But, you know, of course, when you talk about Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing, what most people do not know is that suddenly his sister, I think it was Jennifer McVeigh, has talked about the letters she has. We have a book called OK Bomb, where, of course, they quote Jennifer as saying that she got a letter from Timothy saying that he was working for a special forces unit involved in illegal activity.
Yeah.
There's a book out there. It's called Secrets Worth Dying For, written by the man who was in the next cell in the prison in Colorado next to Timothy McVeigh. And what did McVeigh tell his prison mate? Why, of course, he was working for a special forces unit, and the only way he was going to get out of prison was to go through the execution. And then, of course, actually Terry Nichols has come forward with exactly the same story. Isn't it amazing? Nobody's ever told the people about these three instances where Timothy McVeigh said he was involved with a special forces unit. Maybe, of course, we've never been told the true story of what happened. Maybe that's why the government doesn't want us to know who John Doe 1 and John Doe 2 were.
Well, just last week I interviewed Jesse Trinidu about that subject. His brother Kenneth was beaten to death by the FBI in August of 1995 because he was suspected of being John Doe number 2. And he'd been misidentified as being John Doe number 2.
It isn't amazing that a man can be beaten to death, and even the government has been required to make a settlement with the family because of and not a word of that in the media, and nobody is ever held responsible for beating a man to death in Oklahoma prison. There's so many things going on that the American people are never hearing about, but if it can happen to Kenneth Trinidu, it could happen to you or another loved one. Well, there's so many stories out there, but we're running out of time. Our guest has been William Grigg, and hang on, William, we've just got a moment before we let you go.
All right.
Well, William, on this program, of course, there's an extra 3 minutes, so it's up to you. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Oh, let's, of course, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get to your website?
Okay. The easiest way to do that is to go to the homepage of the Welch Foundation, for which I work as an editor-at-large. It's called The Right Source. The web address is www.rightsourceonline.com. It's one word, rightsourceonline.com. At the top of the page, of the first page of this website, to go to the top of the screen, there will be a banner ad for my new book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can order it right there from our website, or you can order it from Dr. Stan through Radio Liberty. And it's also available on Amazon.com now. If you go down about a third of the way down the screen, scroll down, look at the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see my photograph. And next to it, there's a hot link that will take you to my daily blog, which is called Pro Libertate. It's a Latin phrase that means for freedom. I update it between 3 and 5 times a week as my schedule permits. And I'm writing an awful lot about what's going on with the FLDS case down in Texas. That's a really good illustration of the sort of thing that can happen to anybody. It's not just eccentric, schismatic Mormons whose families can be destroyed by the child-snatching bureaucracy. It's anybody's family that can be destroyed this way. The same type of lesson that we should draw from the Kenneth Trinidu case. Kenneth Trinidu wasn't a particularly good guy. He'd been a bank robber. He'd been reformed. He was picked up on a parole violation. And through a monumentally implausible case of mistaken identity, ended up at a federal transfer center in Oklahoma City, where he was taken into a cell and beaten to death and garroted with a pair of plastic zip cuffs because FBI agents wanted to shut him up, thinking that he had been John Doe number 2, who was in custody elsewhere in the federal prison system. And John Doe number 2 was somebody who knew about the fact that Timothy McVeigh had been part of this clique that had been put together as a black ops unit doing illegal activity, including the bombing at Oklahoma City. So they basically rolled this guy up as part of the grand cover-up to make sure that the real truth about what happened at Oklahoma City didn't come out. That's our government at work. You know, that's what the system that rules us right now is capable of doing. And that's part of the dismal reality that we have to confront, because reality isn't optional.
And, of course, it's not that everybody in the government is bad. We've got a wonderful form of government, but it's simply been taken over by very wicked people who have a different agenda, and because, in my estimation, they worship a different God. Well, we're out of time. William, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well,
it's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you back again next week.
Thank you so much. God bless.
And you too. Bye-bye. All right, fine. That was William Grigg. We certainly hope that you enjoyed him, and I always enjoy having William on. He's one of the most articulate spokesmen we have. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoyed our interview with William Grigg. Of course, he does most of the talking, which is great for me at this time of night. But, of course, listen to what he says. He's certainly one of the most articulate spokesmen we have on our side. Well, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you, of course, would like to, get in touch with us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you join the Radio Liberty family, you get our monthly newsletter, and you get our 4 best tapes or CDs of the month. Or certainly you get the monthly newsletter by email now. And, of course, when you do that, why, you can send it to others very, very readily. And this is what we're hoping more and more people will do, because we want as many people as possible to read our material and help us get the truth out. If you're interested in that book where they talk about Jennifer McVeigh, Timothy McVeigh's brother, saying that she'd gotten a letter from Timothy saying that Timothy was involved with a secret special forces unit. The book is OK Bomb. I'm not sure if we still have it in stock, but you can always give us a call if you'd like to get it. And if we don't have it, why, we'll see if we can get it for you. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get our latest DVD. It's called The Planned Police State. And, of course, it comes with an excellent syllabus. We hope you want to get the talk on The Forbidden Secret. Comes with an excellent syllabus. And in the syllabus, we try to give you the documentation for everything we talk about. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there are powerful spirits or forces out there that are intent upon destroying our nation. And we're going to have to address this. This is why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. I will tell you not only about the secret and semi-secret and covert organizations, but the spirits or force that energizes them. And it will tell you why. It will tell you why the Supreme Court took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments from our schools. It doesn't do any good to notice that they did it, but why did they do it? Another good source on that information is the book Unholy Alliances. We have the only remaining stock of the new books that are available. The author has given them to us, and we are offering them. It's a very, rather inexpensive book, but a very, very important book. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will look seriously into the fact that we're entering into a period of crisis and chaos. There's going to be food shortages here in the United States in the not-too-distant future. In fact, I just got a call this morning from David Sibley of Ready Reserve Food, who we work with, telling me he's unable to buy large carloads of or truckloads of rice anywhere in the country today. Why? Because there's a rice shortage in America, and they will not tell him when they'll be available or what the price will be. There are rice shortages throughout the world, and this is just the first in a series of food shortages that are going to develop. If you have not yet put in your supply of food, why, give us a call and certainly get an emergency food catalog. If you have an emergency food catalog, do not put it off, because I don't know when these shortages are going to hit, but when they do, why, they're going to be drastic problems. And then the other thing is, of course, the government's talking about martial law, and you're not going to be able to leave your house. You may very well have to stay there for weeks at a time because you get along if you couldn't get away from your house. What about water? What happens if they turn off the water? Well, of course, there is we provide barrels of water and pumps to get the water out. And, of course, the Berkey water filters, which will allow you to cleanse water so that you use it and it's potable. Start thinking about how you're going to look after yourself and your family. Remember, the government has underground shelters well stocked with food and water for the elite, but, of course, not for us. And why are they doing that unless they know there's going to be problems down the line? People have written about these underground shelters. Well, there's one man who's working. He's a PhD, but he's working as a window washer in Texas, living for fear of his life. You're not supposed to know what's really going on. And that's why we tell you, and just that's why we ask you, of course, to contact us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. But that's why we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, to pray for our provision and our protection, because we truly are involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.